Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Scholarships are available. Visit rtip.arizona.edu.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and I can officially tell you that what Stu promised, and by the way, you follow Stu at Ovals. Ovals is his Twitter address. I can tell you that these are outstanding. These are Bonnets that are glazed, much lighter in area than the ones you're used to. Angelo's? Antone's, unbelievable, in Metairie, across the river, trying to connect with Larry Swartzlander, and anxious to, I think I did it again with the, let me see, if we're an hour, so he, we're 2 hours, so he, so let me, wow, so 7:30, yeah, I'm just, boy, oh boy, I've struggled with the time after being in Vegas for the 3 hours. So he, when he said 7:30, he's out west. So that's what I thought. So I'm not sure. All right, let me try him a couple more times because I can't get too far afield. We've got Frank coming up. And I got Dr. Alday as well, so we got a full loaded wagon here. Let me try. He might be on the phone too. I mean, they've got this CHRB meeting today, and now he keeps voicing. All right, I'll swing over to Dr. Alday, and we'll come back. Try to come back to Larry and get the Northern Cal perspective, and. Steve's been available, so I'm going to avail his opportunity. He's going to... no, either. Unbelievable. 0-2. All right. We just have to hang in here a minute. And, well, he should be ready. Let me try Dr. Alday one more time. It figures that the minute we get the opening, because I know Frank's coming up as soon as training is done. Dr. Stephen Alday joins us. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And Steve, I spent a little bit of time with yesterday with Sid Fernando, and the sad end for Improbable suffering from ataxia. And it's such a complex topic. And you and I have talked about we've talked about the wobbles now and then. And that was the only thing I could sort of associate, explain to everybody why this is such a difficult thing.
Just one step. Yeah. Well, I'm in a bad area, Steve, because I had to drive. I'm heading over to Lexington. So can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great, actually.
Oh, okay. It says I don't have any signal. But anyway, all right. Well, a tad abnormal gait, meaning that where they do not have a horse, a quadruped in particular, but then the horse is what we're talking about here, doesn't have the ability to control completely its hind end. They've lost some of the nerve tracks, or at least the feedback, so they can know where their hind end is. Typically, you can be ataxic both front end and hind end, but it's more visible. It's usually at a higher degree of the hind end because of the nerve tracks that go back there are more profoundly affected. Because you got to remember now, we have a brain that stands over top. We're erect, whereas a horse is over a quadruped, four limbs, and the furthest nerves to the brain are at the hind end. So if anything can occur along the nervous tract, and you typically associate ataxia with, central nervous disorders due to, you name it, degenerative changes, traumatic, infectious, a number of different things can occur. And what we're talking about, trauma obviously can be direct trauma to the spinal cord, and that will create, central, say, head lesion, neck lesion, this kind of thing. Or if degenerative type thing from the standpoint of being Wobbler syndrome, that creates a tremendous amount of ataxia, most notably in the hind end. EPM can create ataxia, but it tends to be more segmental, and it tends to be more, it's not bilateral. It's more maybe one side than the other. It can also be bilateral, too, if a large enough portion of the nervous tissue is affected. But, so basically it's the ability or inability to control the hind end is what we see clinically. And you can also demonstrate that they are ataxic on their front end, too, and they've lost what they call proprioception, meaning that they'll tend to swing very, very wide and keep the base very wide because they know it's unstable if they have it together and they lean to one side or the other. So that's what you see in an ataxic animal.
What seems to be really kind of impossible about it. It's clearly kind of an all-encompassing term, right? Because this can come from infection. It can come from spine damage, spinal damage. I mean, considering, Steve, that a stallion, has to mount mares, 100 to 150 times, impact, spinal strain or some sort of damage to a vertebrae can trigger this. I mean, it seems like there's encephalitis. I mean, there's like a million things that can cause this.
Yes, that's exactly. Ataxia is a diagnostic descriptive term of what you see clinically. It's not a diagnosis.
Right.
I mean, it's part of a diagnosis, but it's not the diagnosis. In other words, it doesn't get to the specifics of what caused it, and which could be, as I just described to you, there can be numerous causes. Traumatic, infectious, degenerative, metabolic. I mean, I can go on and on and on that'll create ataxia.
I know he was at Rude and Riddle, Improbable, I saw Elliot Walden quoted as saying he actually had been responding well, but he went to lay down and broke a tibia, and that was that. What kind of treatment what's the approach to even deal with this?
Well, that's an excellent question, and typically what you got to do is, early on is you need to make a call, as to what your problem is, because that way you can protect both that horse and maybe get him improved, or you can stop it from spreading. Let's say, for instance, neuroherpes that we've talked about numerous times, okay, presents early on sometimes as an ataxia. And then what they do is they go down and they can't get back up because they've lost, you know, a lot of the functioning nerve trunks that go to the hind end muscles, you know, this sort of thing. And, you know, in fillies, one of the first signs we see while they're still standing up is that you'll go in, and I've seen it before, when a filly has urine scald going down her or between her hind legs from her vulva because she can't control her bladder. And, you know, you'll check bandages on a racehorse and you'll see they're wet and they smell of urine, this kind of thing. And then when they go down, if you see that, I mean, it's like a clinical sign on a filly. And I actually had one presented that way one time. So, you know, I knew right away that, you know, we better institute, you know, like, you know, stop this potentially from spreading throughout lots of horses in the barn so we don't have our real train wreck on our hands here. You know, and then obviously there's quarantine, and we've talked about that as well, you know, the period of time.
Right.
You know, going with antivirals and, you know, the whole bit. But you know, obviously quarantine and the stop of the spread and good, you know, cleaning techniques and things like this is paramount on something like that right away. Wobbler syndrome, on the other hand, is, you know, basically it's a degenerative change due to, you know, metabolic, you know, essentially OCDs in the cervical vertebra, typically cervical vertebra, they're usually somewhere between 5 and 7. People like Steve Reed are more educated and better suited to give you the complete diagnostic and the, you know, the, how this thing, you know, they work them up. But then eventually they do what they call, you know, they put media, you know, into the spinal canal, and they see that it's impinged, and, you know, they diagnose, you know, a horse with, you know, cervical stenosis due to Wobbler syndrome, you know, a collapsed vertebra. And this can happen. It's, you know, I mean, it can be like a smoking gun, or like it can be a time bomb, and then all of a sudden the perfect environment is boom. I mean, I was around a filly that was a multiple stakes winner and got on a trailer from California heading back to Texas. And when she got off the trailer in Texas, she was a Wobbler. And it's just, you know, perfect storm. Everything came together at the right time, boom, or the wrong time in this case. And she walked on the truck of stakes winner and walked off a Wobbler and never raised again. So,
well,
I mean, you know, it can be just that dramatic.
And you know, my first encounter, going back, I don't know, 20 years in terms of reading, and my first introduction, you know, to anything ataxic and specifically Wobbler syndrome, which is thought generally to apply to younger horses, was
right.
General Duke, who became a Wobbler at 4 and was eventually...
This filly was 4, too, when she became a Wobbler. That's the really ironic part about it, you know? And she didn't fit the profile. I mean, there was no predisposition, there was nothing there. They kind of give you a heads up. But, you know, like you said, encephalitis. I mean, there's a number of viral infectious causes. There could be, you know, protozoal like EPM, and there could be, you know, you name it. And you can have trauma. I mean, you name it. It is a broad, diverse group of things that can actually cause this particular problem.
Well, and the one, you know, one aspect of the way this, you know, the passing of Improbable was reported is just this generic, you know, ataxia. Well, that
right.
there's nothing in the body of the reporting that explains how, you know, he presented and you know, the period of time with which they were attending to it.
No specifics, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, which is really, frankly, a disservice to not, you know, to you know, leave it open ended and not give readers an understanding of any, you know, any of the way in which this can come on. And
right,
I mean,
right.
the first thing I thought of was, you know, something spinal involving, you know, the physical exertion and what is involved in the covering of mares. I mean, if you got a horse that is covering 150 mares, and is up on, you know, is up on a lift essentially, and you know, in a position, you know, the potential to damage their spine is pronounced. It's happening.
That happens.
Yeah, I mean,
they do. They obviously do everything, Steve. You know, to protect that. And of course, you know, if they're running a good operation, anybody, most operations routinely, inspect stands and have them on a cyclic ongoing basis. And I myself I don't do a lot of group or stand work per se, except I have I work at one particular facility and they routinely have me go through the stands and make sure that we're solid and they're good, their hind ends are good and they're comfortable and they cover, and I actually go and watch stands cover mares or watch videos of them, and for instance, ones that are come back from catastrophic injuries, certain ones, here and there, like Epicenter's one that comes to mind. And, I did a lot of the follow-up work on him, and it's worked out well. The horse has done well,
That's a good point.
And a number of others in the past as well.
There's going to be, I imagine, insurance, there's insurance, right, that would cover
it doesn't always, they don't always insure these horses, but I know if I owned a piece of it, it'd be insured. So, for a client or, the stand or whatever, I aren't sure want to have that in place, I would think, but it wouldn't be the first time that there are places that don't insure that happens,
And actually the specific quote from Elliot, talked about going to Root and Riddle to try to determine the cause. So maybe maybe there'll be a follow-up after necropsy.
Well, I would say, even if they're, if they need to know, they can do a post on the horse and then, and see, what the cause was, whether it was infected. Obviously, you got to, the light bulb's got to go on when a horse is ataxic all of a sudden, that, trauma comes up first because that's the most obvious. If you don't have evidence that, or you haven't had any cases of neuroherpes around, you get rid of that right away, because you got to institute other things to protect your investments of other horses too,
Sure.
Exposure to the client's horses and whatnot. So, there's things, you got to go into action. I remember at Churchill, this filly was a first crop filly of Vindication. And she was out of a really good mare, a mare that had produced a Derby win. Okay. The mother of Sea Hero, I believe it was. They had me come in and look at her, and of course, the first thing I did was, she was in the morning, they weren't sure what was wrong, and she was acting funny on the wall. She was tied up, and she was standing. And then, they said, "Can you come take a look?" And I said, I'm right in the middle. When they get a break here and the sun comes up, it was dark. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning. And so about 7, I got over there, 7:30. It was in the spring. And the filly had gotten down. I said, when did she get down? They said, because they originally thought she was colicking. I don't know what the deal was there, but, so I get there and look her over, and she's laying down, and we turned her, and I noticed her hind bandages. She had her bandages on still, and she was in sternal, meaning she was laying on her chest and she was sitting up. And I noticed when we turned her to get her, try to get her up, the hind bandages were urine soaked. I smelled them. And then I saw the urine scald going down her hind legs. And I went, oh, geez, this looks like, neuroherpes to me. Well, we called, the mayor was, this filly was insured for a lot of money, potential, residual value and whatnot, and as a racehorse. And then they came and picked her up at a, from one of the clinics with one of the hospital, the deals. We pulled the winch thing out and later pulled her out by hand, put her on a board, winched her onto the ambulance trailer, took her over to the clinic in Lexington. And they told me it wasn't neuroherpes. They said it was trauma. And then the next day, then they treated it for trauma. And the next day said, no, it's EPM. And then after, this was on a Monday or Tuesday, here it was a week later, they call up and tell me, it's neuroherpes because they tested her. Of course, I was a little disappointed because they didn't come to thought, right away. And, the medicine, the board certified medicine guy in Lexington, didn't even go that direction. But I'd already instituted, the isolation, and then we started all these things on an anti antivirals, and then basically, you know, kept it, you know, until they came up with that diagnosis. Of course, then they wanted to jump out of their skin. I said, well, you guys are like 5 days late here, but that's how it goes. So, anyway.
Well, Steve, I appreciate this because I know how my mind works. If I'm confused and looking for answers, that means, you know, listeners are, and it was such a generic, report of improbable.
Description. Look, I'm sure, I am certain, you know, with the valuable bloodstock and stallions, you know, that are over there in proximity of people, I'm sure that they, you know, certainly took into consideration all the possibilities and instituted isolation and cleanliness techniques and things like this until they come up with a proof or positive diagnosis of what's going on. That's the key, you know, so you don't spread it around, you don't have a disaster in your hands. And more than likely, you know, I mean, those are probably just the details that were left out.
Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Steve, as always, invaluable. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Good talking to you, buddy. Take care.
Thanks. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Let me, we do have Frank here, and most notably, because Frank has had his share of Benets over the years, and you introduced me to Morning Call, right?
I did. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
It's one of my customers.
Well, and these are good. Antoine's from Metairie is getting a thumbs up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Antoine's is good. So I've done business with them. You know, my civilian gig is I'm with a dairy.
You're a dairy man.
Yeah, I'm out there early.
Well, you know what? We're going to talk about the NHC in a minute, but it would have been good if you had. It just occurred to me. Yeah, the winner, he's a produce man.
Oh, is he?
You're just a dairy man. We need a butter and egg man, and we'll have everything you want.
I just thought of him walking through the press box hall when I saw the Hall of Fame. Somebody sent out a picture. Was he wearing two different color shoes, brown and black?
I didn't notice.
The day of the contest?
I didn't notice.
Because Alan Black Cat Lacombe famously did that all the time for luck. Somebody showed me a tweet where he had a different pair of shoes on. A different one, brown, one black.
That's funny.
Alan Lacombe used to do it all the time here. Have you heard the story of Alan Black Cat Lacombe?
I know. I mean, I know him, the personality, and I can tell you that the black cats at the track super's office, it's unbelievable.
Well, they live right under there, under the control room, the control truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's literally, I got to put the picture up. I do it every year. The cats of the track super office.
Yeah. So I think I know who's responsible for all that mess.
Wait, one cat in particular, you mean?
Well, that started, yeah, coming to feed them and keep them going. So Sturgis Ducoin, Pi Subban used to help him, and Pi used to come and feed all the cats that stayed around after all the guys left. And he might have kept this whole thing going. I mean, they got every morning they're on a track, running out to the infield, running back. And I got to go around them because I won't cross paths with a black cat.
Well, there's the half a dozen of them sitting on that.
That's tough.
They sit up on the roof. They're on the stairs.
They're
glowering at you.
They're giving you that. Walking in a racetrack.
Exactly.
Right?
Giving you that big eye.
Right.
We're going to talk to Frank McGooey. I got to do one thing quick, though, Frank.
Knock yourself out.
You all right? Let me just
I got a few minutes for you.
All right, good. Because let me just try Larry one more time. And it may be that the window's closed, and we may have to just wait until after
You would put me after a doctor to make me look stupid. Right?
He's a vet, though. You know, it's like following a dentist. It's, you know, a doctor or a doctor dentist. I think we're going to have to just sit back and watch what happens at this CHRB meeting because I'm not reaching Larry Sportslater. Well, the situation in Northern Cal and the CHRB meeting today. Yesterday we had TOC. Bill Nader, and I last night I talked to Larry Swartzlander about, you know, from CARF, and he says they've got a real plan that will work, but that isn't even the issue. I don't think anybody doubts that Pleasanton could pull off the dates. That's not the question. The question is the saber rattling from, you know, from first, and you know, threatening to slash purses and you know, essentially.
I haven't heard all this.
Put the track up for sale. This all came about in the last, call it 48 hours. For those that haven't listened to either Bill with me yesterday or last week, Gary Fenton laid the whole thing out at OBS. The idea behind closing Golden Gate was to consolidate racing at Santa Anita and to utilize the Northern Cal portion of simulcast revenues.
Okay.
And in fact, yesterday Bill Nader used the amount in the neighborhood of $17 million, and essentially they feel it's imperative that money come to Southern Cal to reinforce and stabilize racing in California long term. The fairs could still operate their fair, the fair season, but they are threatening the establishment and the CHRB that this has to happen, essentially, is what Craig Fravel's suggestions were. And so we'll see. It's a thorny, frankly impossible situation. And
we managed to put ourselves in some of those in this business, don't we?
Well, they're also dealing with these purse overpayments that Gulfstream's dealing with it too.
I remember, recently the report came out that you had talked about. I caught part of it about the overview of the industry. Wasn't that recently that something came out?
There was, and it hasn't gotten nearly enough attention. The conversation with Joe Applebaum, the study that he commissioned,
right,
from Yale grad students that had a lot of interesting revealing information.
Tell me if this was addressed, because I didn't hear all of it, but I thought about it this past week when I was at NHC. We stood up every day for the national anthem, and you get a chance to look around that room, and you realize we need to attract some young people, because there are a lot of guys my age in that room and older.
It's funny you say that because in preparing for Sunday's broadcast, the simulcast feed we did, I went through the top 15 and I noted how old they were, where they were from, how they qualified, etc. And I mean, am I 64? I think I'm 64. I think I'm 1959. I was astounded how many of the final tables,
right,
were 62, 63, 64. It was very interesting. Then there were, that was the lion's share, and then there was a 70 and even an 80, but then there was a 53 and a 38, and this topic, it doesn't scare me like it does some people, I understand the need. At Procter & Gamble, we called it the leaky bucket syndrome.
Right.
You fill the top of the bucket, and there's always a trickle, out the bottom of the bucket, so you have to always put more in than is trickling out. There's a free time, a leisure time curve. There's an expendable income curve that coincides with the aging. And, as long as we capture some 20-somethings interest in the game, they'll begin to
cultivate.
Exactly. They'll begin to get really interested and serious about the game in their 30s, and then in their 40s, they're real players. I mean, that was the curve for me. I started going to Triple Crown events, specifically Preakness, in my 20s, and started to get serious. Then I ended up in Montreal, and so now I'm 3 hours from Saratoga in my 30s and coming every week, still going to Triple Crown events. Then I got really involved in my 40s. I mean, that is the standard.
I guess you're right.
Curve. Who?
I'm a little different. Obviously, my life is a little more lopsided. horses, and especially the older I get. My first Derby was I was 27. That was 91. Strike the gold. Is that right?
Strikey.
Yeah.
As Nick says, strikey, strikey.
I guess. I hope it keeps going, because it's a great game, and I'm concerned about all the kids or younger people with these sports apps, betting sports. Because as long as 11's more than 10, that's a tough game to beat, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when you got to put in the work to learn the game.
But you got a fighting chance, even with the shitty takeout.
Absolutely.
Even with the onerous takeout.
No doubt.
You got and Stu talked about it in the time we just spent. It's a thinking man's gambling game.
I wake up every day, even if I got crushed the day before. And I respect the process. I go through the process.
Trust the process, baby.
Yes, trust the process. And it just, I think I'm a win every day when I start anew, and we just go from there.
Exactly. Know? Exactly right. Speaking of which, trusting every day, you could have had a bad Friday in the NHC and come back on Saturday. That's certainly what happened with Seth Morris, for instance.
Boy, that was a big score. Well, is that some kind of record? The number he hit?
Seth on Saturday, you mean?
Yeah,
it was big. I that's a good question, actually.
So he ended up with like 270 at the end of that day, or 250,
something like
and he
that.
Only
yeah.
had 30.
Yeah,
the day $30
the day before.
That's where I was the day before. I had 30 on Friday. I think I wound up with 117 on end of Saturday.
Everybody says, you know, they want to get to one. They want to get to 75 day one, mm-hmm. so that you know they've got
right.
a toehold and a platform to then move forward.
Everybody's got a story in that room about bad beats.
Well, some are crazier than others. I mean, Clocker to have what happened to him,
that was
to
amazing.
Have a dead heat,
yeah.
keep you out of the final. Of
it would have been really close for sure. And one more jump,
yeah,
he was going to win it.
Yeah,
yeah,
crazy,
it was nuts,
crazy. One story that I mean, I have yet to we still have to flesh out is. And I don't want to use the word collapse, but there were seasoned, prominent players, four of them, who had two entries poised all Saturday.
You know, I saw Tony Zhao was one of them. He had two up there at the end.
Tony, Marshall Graham,
yeah.
Steve Simonovich, Christy Moore, Alexis Epp, all five
right.
had two tickets. They were... I mean, they could have made up five of the 10 final table.
Right.
And I mean, to see Tony Joe through the late stages of the semifinal, he was sitting 10th and 14th, 11th and 15th, 12th and 16th.
Right.
Race after race. And the thought was, well, all right, it's coming. It never came. I mean, it was shocking, and Marshall
scored a second day was surprising.
Well, he admitted he said shell shock.
We all have those kind of days,
right? It is the theme of discussion all 3 days because Hammer, Hammer dabbles in contests, but the question he wanted explored fairly was the two ticket scenario. And Paul Sherman, Paul Sherman's visit, he visits every year. Paul's visit was very funny because he said, I want to say one thing first out, but, you know, as we get started. You remember last year I said to you, no more two tickets. Well, that went out the window in 3 seconds. he said, I got my first ticket, then I got a second one. So he said, I abandoned my promise that I was going to only play one ticket.
I guess you just got to approach it different. I this first year I'd been back in 5 years. I stopped trying to qualify about 5 years ago. And I remember the last time I was there, I was in top 20 pretty late in the Saturday. And then it just seemed like an endless parade of bombs. Just started.
That's right.
It
That's
happens
right.
all the time.
Yeah.
Right. It
yeah.
happens every Saturday.
Yeah.
That's what I said. You know what? I'm not going to try to come back here again. But I really enjoyed going back this year. And I even told John and the other guys, Jason and Rock Edwards. I said I may try to qualify this year to come back because I had so much fun. It was a good time.
It really.
And they do it well.
They really do, and better and better. And the building.
That was convenient.
The building is on the upswing again,
right.
This Horseshoe Vegas. And I will reiterate, and I'm sure we'll talk to Eric Hallstrom quite soon because we're not far off from the start of the Horseshoe Indy season. the industry has a real friend in Caesars. The Caesars likes racing, and they're committed.
Yeah, good deal.
So that story, and they're apparently, you know, they're delighted with this Mike Gillum, who qualified at Horseshoe Indy.
Yeah,
and you know, it's quite a fun parallel.
So you said you had him on a show live
three times. It was crazy.
At what point? During the final table?
Final table. The girl that was producing, helping GD Hieronymus, comes over and says, "Do you want Mike Gillum?" Well, I gotta say no.
And where Rich, what position did he start the final table in?
Final table?
Yeah, like
eighth
or ninth, right?
Eighth or ninth.
And I mean, he picked four winners in a row.
Yes,
that were logical. Who I remember following along with him and going, you know what? That would have, if I was betting that race, that's been the horse I would have taken.
He right? He was committed to picking winners. Period. Didn't care if they were 8-5, 2-1, 14-1. Didn't matter. So whatever they were going to be, they were going
to
be.
I respect his, you know, his following his strategy. I've always personally thought the way to win any success I've ever had in those type of concerts, it's a mix of. I mean, these people that say I'm never taking a favorite. Hey, it's a mandatory race, and there's a favorite I don't think can lose, I'm taking him.
Yeah.
And I think there's a mix of some mid-price horses you got to like, and then you got to create some scenarios where you might be able to score on a bomb and take those shots too. And it's got to be some kind of mix for me, always is.
And I play, you know, we have that media contest, the charity contest, and, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, There were also certain places that you could see that it was worth going against the favorite. In fact, the race at Laurel that scratched down to four,
yeah,
that was a mandatory.
Right, I think I took the one. I think they had the
one was that Shaft's Bullet,
right?
And 1080.
Yeah, that was crazy.
1080.
That was nuts. You're right. I remember that.
I mean, actually, the champ Bajic was on Shaft's Bullet too. It was very funny. And then somehow, in a four-horse field, the win place mutual's 1080.
That's because the favorite missed second, right?
Missed everything. He got run over. He was off the board completely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it you know, and there was a few of those where, like, a 7-2 paid much closer to 4-1 because of the anomaly, you know. In fact, I brought that up with Chris Larmy about getting away from the fractional odds and basically, you know, we've been promised this for ages.
So I noticed somebody, I think it was somebody making the cutoff on day two, won by 6 cents. And
well,
that's
the breakage. The breakage.
Yeah.
Hammer said that right away when the first Turfway mandatory came up and you saw the you know, the 7.26 or whatever the mutual was, and Hammer said, "I wonder." He said that make, you know, we'll know who's a Turfway player, you know, based on those numbers. It's very interesting. Turfway was a wonderful addition to the landscape, and in fact, having Churchill back in the fold here, obviously Fairgrounds had a lousy weekend weather wise, but having, you know, the Churchill properties. And them back in on contests is a positive. And not only, you know, Turfway and its full fields and interesting racing got exposure. Tony Kahlo got exposure.
He's great.
He's terrific.
I love him.
The fact that he waited, you know, this long to get, you know, not that there was anything wrong with.
No, he's got a great delivery.
You know, where he was, you know, we love Finger Lakes, and he actually was a terrific addition to Finger Lakes' broadcast offering. But, you know, to get this.
Yeah, he does
job,
a good job.
Yeah, it's great.
Definitely does.
Well, let's get into this card on Saturday, and we're going to start with the Louisiana Derby, uniquely positioned. Frank, for your observations, 8 horses out of these 12, now 11, because you can scratch Triple Espresso.
Right.
So 8 of the 11 are Fairgrounds based.
Yes, yes.
And 6 coming out of the Risen Star.
We should definitely get some a lot of questions answered after this, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I mean, How do you know what to, you know, is Hall of Fame going to show back up? He's training well. He deserves a bit of a pass for that last race. I think they all kind of deserve probably a bit of a pass for that last race. That track was such a mess, you know. Knock on wood, it looks like we're going to be good weather this Saturday. But I'm interested to see what how he does. Pletcher's horse, Antiquarian. I really like the work I saw of him on XBTV on March 8th against Agate Road. He looked like he was really going good. And I know his numbers are a little light, but he looked like a horse that would have another forward move, and he definitely looked like the distance wouldn't be any problem. After mentioning the work with Agate Road, I'd be surprised if that one won, but you got IRED jumping on. I guess you can't leave him out. Catching Freedom worked better than he normally has. He went well on March 9th with Discreet Mischief, a promising maiden of Cox's. And then Mike Deliberto told me this morning that when I was out of town, he worked really good on March 15th, too. So it looks like he's poised for another effort. And both of the McPeak courses, Real Men Violin and Common Defense, have both been doing good here. And, you know, they're not without a chance. And Track Phantom, who personally, I kind of feel like more distance isn't going to be his friend, but it wouldn't shock me if he wins because Steve's horses just keep progressing and he's doing great. They all look like, you know, both of Steve's horses are doing good. I'm not in love with anybody in here. I don't know if during your course of the week have strong opinions on this race because I really don't have any.
I think personally, for me, it's going to end up being kind of a board, you know, let the board maybe mm-hmm. dictate your individual race action. I mean, I think there's some obvious horses that you're going to cover in multi-race sequences.
Right.
And don't forget, there is the Bluegrass Bayou pick five that's going to combine three races from here and two and the 2 3-year-old races from Turfway. But the board, for me, is going to end up, you know, telling the story. And there's a horse you did not talk about that's local, and that's Honor Marie.
Been better. Definitely needed that last start, and it has worked better since that race. Came back on February 29th, immediately after, and worked again with Drip, who obviously have decided to win. Where are they going? Pat Daymile with him?
That seems to be the plan.
Drip was better than him again that day. And then he worked with a goo. Sprinter.
Who they think highly of.
And he handled him pretty easy. He went out about two lengths in front of him. He was honest, definitely best of that set. I didn't see his last work, but it looks like it was pretty good, 48-3. So I would expect he's definitely going to be tighter. But where he's going to be coming from, I think there's going to be a lot of traffic to negotiate with Curtis.
And that's exactly the thing to talk about. I mean, the three horses... numerically, the 10, 11, 12, Common Defense, who showed better speed, McPeak, in the Rebel.
Yeah, he was impressive.
This Tuscan Gold, who stepped forward for Chad, this may be, you know, a potential overlay, and Track Phantom, the three of them from the outside, and then back inside.
Antiquarian is going to be close.
Antiquarian is going to be close.
And so will Hall of Fame.
And so those are the ones. You feel like the winner comes from that group somewhere.
I felt that, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So I personally was not going to be using Chad's horse. It was visually impressive, but that was like a match race. With those two horses beat the field an acre that day. He'd have to step it up for me. I watched his last work on XBTV, and I'm not going to use him.
All right. Well, he's 8-1 morning line. The reason Antiquarian is exciting is he's almost as fast as, you know, some of the favorite horses, and he's 12-1 morning line.
And I don't even know that you can compare any times those days. I mean, that day, the track changed so much that day. They all ran on the same day, but... there was 12 races that day, and it just kept raining and raining. The track was constantly changing.
Good point.
I don't really trust a lot of figures on that day.
So we're gonna.
I'm keeping an open mind. That's why I'm not in love with anybody in the race, but I think we'll get a real good idea after the race what it looks like going forward.
Well, there's been some years here where the Louisiana Derby would be the last race of the meet. Back historically,
we come back with 15 on Sunday.
Well, and I did, you know, some people were kind of laughing about the 15, but forgot about last Sunday. You know, you lose a card. They're trying to get some of those races, you know, back. So we understand that.
I'm going to have to pace myself because I always come out for the last day, and if I come out too early down in the Star Guitar Bar, the Colemans will be flowing at 15. I might need a ride home.
Let's move forward or backward into the Fairground Oaks, and this is a fun group. You got four of them out of the Rachel that finished 1, 2, 4, and 5, and I thought the middle portion of this field, Tarifa, Intricate, and Our Pretty Woman, were the three that you had to focus on.
That's it. I really think Tarifa and Intricate. And, you know, I've got a bit of a crush on Intricate. I had a crush on her going into the Rachel Alexandra. But she sure seems like she's a lot tighter coming out of it. I'll give her a little bit of an edge over Tarifa. But Tarifa is the one horse I think that could beat her.
Do we hear that? Well, first of all, we know that Alpine Princess
is going to Turfway.
Is going to Turfway.
Lucy's Got Game is coming out.
There you go.
Dallas is staying in with Accommodating Eva.
I thought she was going to the Crescent.
No. I heard she was staying in. I heard he was going to run the other one. Yeah, right. He's got another one. Plum somebody in the Crescent.
Oh, all right. Hold on. I thought Marcus. We'll have Marcus Hirsch here live tomorrow.
Well, maybe not.
Hold on. Let me check Marcus.
Game day decision.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. He hasn't committed.
She'd be a brick through a window in a Louisiana bred race.
Right.
She's up against it against these.
Look at this, Marcus. Marcus is using the picture I took of him and his wife last year on his banner. I'm really honored by that. let me see. I thought Marcus had something to say about this.
Dallas likes chasing the big money.
Well, Jake Delhomme is leaning on with Touch Upon a Star for the New Orleans Classic. Lure Him In is coming out of the New Orleans. Safi Joseph.
Okay.
Is running in the Go Sapper next weekend at home instead. I could have sworn that here you go. Oh, okay. No, you're right. That's what you were quoting. Okay, that game time decision. Got it. All right. Very good.
I will tell you that Accommodate Eva nominated in November for the Oaks.
All right, so that and we know that Dallas is a big game hunter. Also, I should mention, since it's at the top of Marcus's page, the news broke yesterday officially. I mean, I think people have heard. We knew that Davy Carroll was going to work for Cherie.
Correct.
Basically, everybody but Aislinn, the whole Carroll family, has been acquired by Belladonna and Cherie DeVoe. Cherie is now buying families.
Yeah.
David and Gordo buys horse families, and Cherie is buying human families.
Wow.
And so they're
picking up a good dedicated crew.
Well, Decky Carroll, his riding career has ended, and he's going to work, and of course Kim as well, and David Carroll all joining up with Cherie. And Mark Cassie's kind of consolidating some of his...
To her benefit. I'd be excited. She's got some good horses to be around.
Well, and Decky, good for him. He'll be out on his own someday, too. I've known him since he was literally...
Oh, good.
I mean,
I didn't know he was hanging him up, but he had a couple mounts here this meet. Yeah,
he's getting tall. He's he's kind of angular, as they say. He's got that. What's the Sleepy Hollow?
it's got to be a great perspective to be a trainer after being a jockey. I mean,
it's like a it's like baseball catchers becoming managers. Major league managers.
Correct.
Field general.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. All right.
Yeah. No, invaluable. Right.
So
sure.
Tarifa and Intricate for the Phillies. Let's keep going because we got a few more races and the
Turf Stake.
The Turf Stake is fun and it's
fun.
A big bulky field. I got seven different numbers at the top of my page.
I got one. I'm gonna send it in. Web Slinger.
Wow.
So I thought the two coming out of the race in there's three of them coming out of the race at the Pegasus World Turf.
Yeah.
And I'm very busy. Beat me out of about 200,000 that day. Because in the Pegasus, my big play was Warmheart. I had $1,000 straight exacta, Warmheart over Catnip at 45-1. And I had a $500 reverse, and I was getting back over 100,000 either way. And I was 1-2 at the 16th pole, and IRAD came and split me when I'm very busy. But, I mean, she did it. She ran him down. She was good. But Web Slinger had really significant trouble in that race. I don't know. Have you watched that over?
Not since.
You need to watch it. It was, I mean, Ed Trump got out of the gate slow, then got totally taken up turning from home. And you got Zayas, no knock against him, but Pratt just moves these horses up on the turf. He's going to have that horse closer. It seems to me whenever he gets on a horse for the first time on a turf,
they're just
in better positions. I like Web Slinger quite a bit, and the only horse I'm worried about beat me is Chad from the outside post. And if he beats me, he beats me. I'll be okay. I'll have that exact. Those are the only two I want out of there. I think the local group, strong quality. If he couldn't get it done against the locals the other day, walking on the lead, I don't see any reason to get it done on Saturday. Beatbox, I don't know if you could get a better ride than Rosario gave Beatbox that day from the 10 hole.
Yes.
He got it tucked in, and when Johnny's Fireball abandoned the rail, he shot right through, and those three hit the wire together, and Gigante was a little bit further back. But I just think that Web Slinger and Chad's horse are just a cut above these. I'm very busy. I'm very busy. Looks like he's really getting good, too.
Well, he's going to have to work out a trip, obviously. He's 4-1, 9-2 on Web Slinger. You mentioned Gigante. I've been on hand for some of his successes. He's a funky horse. I had him in that secretariat at Colonial at 23-1.
I liked him in the Woodchopper. He was good in that final three-year-old stake. And he wasn't bad the other day against first-time facing older horses.
Well, and I don't think necessarily that given the turf was to his liking either.
Right. Well, you know, I know we had a lot of rain, but
the times were okay.
The fractions were, I mean, I don't
they
think.
They were not terrible.
I'm not so sure.
It was that, you're saying it wasn't that, was it that
I mean,
yielding.
The fractions were pretty good following the races those days.
All right. Yeah. Well, there, I think people, this may be very valuable information from Frank McGooey because it's a race where people are going to be lured toward a lot of potential prices, including Johnny's Fireball, 10-1.
Right. Well, the day for Johnny was last
time. Yeah. Last time, as Andy Serling says, last time was the time.
I needed him for a lot. Oh, my God.
That's right. That's right. That's right. You had pushed.
That was my smart aleck opinion of the day.
Well, that's why we count on you. How about in this New Orleans, and you've got a hatful coming out of the mine shaft, of course, running back.
How about Red Route 1? How do you get to draw the rail three races in a row in route races at the fairgrounds? You want to be there every time. You know,
and he hasn't done much with him.
No. Right. He just kind of keeps coming along and coming along. You know, I'm really looking forward to watching this race. I'm so excited to see how Touch Upon a Star stacks up against these. He was, he handled Tumbarumba so easily when they faced here. And then Tumbarumba came back and put together those two great efforts at Gulfstream in his prior two starts. Two back when Tumbarumba came in. So, you know, you got to think he fits with these. But the race is just, it's fantastic. I thought that Best Actor ran great the other day, took a lot of heat and stayed on, kept trying the whole way. Money Supplies, he's caught in some favorable setups and some he might really like the slop. I'm curious to see what he does on a dry track.
Horse has won five straight and six of seven.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can't knock him. I mean, this is a really good race. Another one where I'm not in love with anybody, but I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, I tell you what, Gary Scherer's horse, Velociter, that was a hell of a race the other day.
And he is going to get a fabulous trip.
Yeah.
I texted G as I was in the air, as I was handicapping this flying in from Vegas, and I texted, I'll tell you something funny about this horse, and it's no knock on Kevin Attard, you know, who has limited opportunities, during the course of a season when you're based in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dirt horse. He's been a dirt horse all along.
Right. Right.
And he's been forced to run on the synthetic.
I tell you, that was a big effort. He was relentless that day. He just kept coming.
He should get a fabulous trip. He's 10-1, and that's who I'm picking on top, I think.
I think he's a must-use.
Him or Money Supply. I've got it 5-8-3.
I think Best Actor, Velociter, have to be used. I think Touch Upon a Star, I'm going to use a little. I got a place in my heart for him.
Well, if we ran this in the Superdome,
right.
Jake would win.
Right. But couldn't Gasoline get a little better trip on Saturday? He was kind of between.
He's a high octane horse.
Yeah.
Hey now.
Now he may be able to sit a little bit. His hand kind of got forced in that last race. Who was it? Gargan sent in a horse with Saez. Who was it?
Dubinel?
Yes, Dubinel. And Saez decided he was going to make the first move against Best Actor on the backstretch. And Johnny had to kind of go up in between them to maintain his position. So they wound up heating it pretty good. Now, Best Actor was the one that survived it the best. But he may be able to rate and get a little comfier trip than he got the other day. Maybe he could get a piece.
I won't argue.
I got a little more work to do on the card, but I mean that's what my initial thoughts when I was going through it. I've seen enough of Red Route One myself. Although the mile and an eighth will suit him.
The next time to bet him is in the Pimlico Special.
Okay.
That I made. I told Asmussen 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. Can we get a Pimlico Special future book? Because. Hey. That's his next win.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Mark
that seems
it
like a good spot.
Talk about the Tom Benson and the mile and a 16th turf race. And when how long ago is it? Now it's probably 4 or 5 years ago, was in town when Mr. Benson passed away. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
It was like
he did a lot for the community. Yeah, still does.
It was a huge outpouring. Yeah. It was crazy.
I was out at Second Harvester's Food Bank for a work related event, and I didn't even know they got a giant addition that they donated money to out there. They do a lot of good stuff in the community.
Well,
no doubt.
Those scenes of him coming down to.
He was having
the floor
fun.
Of the Superdome was
couldn't dance, but he was having fun.
Unbelievable.
So this might be my wise guy opinion here. I think the one's got a legit shot. Trying My Heart Out.
Uh huh.
She's been good, and she's still doing good. She's been working good since that last race. She's got to get a great trip. She's going to get a great trip. I don't think that this is probably Guerrero's best. Ability riding turf, but at the price she'll be, I think she definitely has a chance. And I didn't think that there were many others that did have chances. You obviously have to use the winner back. And Spirit and Glory is exactly the kind of horse I was talking about when Pratt gets on a horse for the first time last time. He just had that horse much closer up near the front than she had been in some of the previous replays I watched. And I think he made a difference. She wound up getting a great trip, but I thought it was a very good ride, too. I know Delahaye.
I like Delahaye.
Had everything her way the other day.
Yep.
But she certainly moves and looks like a horse that's got another forward move in her, right?
Yep. Lightly raced. This is a Chad. Chad, I'd love to find out the numbers of Chad Scott, first time in state company.
Those would be my three in here.
No Oubre.
No. I mean, I love her, but I think this is going to be tough for Mount of 16th. She's kind of built like more of a sprinter, and I think she'll probably be a little overbet what I read. I'm going to avoid her.
What about Tafani?
She wasn't bad. She was really good against three-year-olds, and then I was a little disappointed in her last effort. She's done okay, but I don't think she her best is going to be as good as the other ones I've talked about.
Interesting.
She actually would be my fourth horse in here over Oubre.
All right. So trying my heart out and looking at prices, 10-1.
Yeah.
10-1.
Yep.
All right.
Price. This horse trains really good on the dirt too. Trying my heart out. I think that one race on a slop when he came off was powerful. The 2X back in December. Yeah.
Seventh race is the Crescent City Derby. El Dinero, all El Dinero?
You know.
Little spinning aces?
I thought El Dinero, I mean, he's going to get a great setup, but I thought he had a little bit of a hang in him the other day. Maybe Graham moved him a little early. I put a comment on him that he moved him early and he led and maybe hung a tad. Interesting rider change on spinning aces. Going to get a really good trip.
That's Gaffleone's dream spot, the rail. He's pretty clever in there.
Yeah, I had both of those open. I didn't know anything about McCarthy's horse. If he's staying in here, right, he's cross-centered at Turfway.
What did we say? KK offered that. Hold on. Kevin said Blue-Eyed George stays home, stays here.
Stays home? Well, she's not here.
No, I'm running here.
Oh, he's running here. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Preston
City Derby. So the 1, 2, and 3, and then good and stout. I mean, she wasn't that far off of El Dinero last time. I mean, I couldn't dismiss her either. 1, 2, 3, and 7 would be the ones in there for me. None of them I'm really in love with, though.
Large Hut. Son of a ship.
What's that?
Son of a ship?
Son of a ship.
The one stretching out?
Yep.
Yeah. I think more of a sprinter.
The maker?
Yeah.
It's worth the price.
All right.
Listen, I can't knock anybody anybody in that race. I think that race is kind of wide open.
The sixth is that first level allowance, and Jake Gellner, solid country gold.
Yeah.
I got circled repeatedly, excuse me, is that the right? No, I'm at the wrong number. My eyes are getting bad. Who's the seven?
The seven is
Kelly Coco.
You can't be on that horse. Shane Wilson?
Oh, as a potential wire candidate getting back on the grass.
Well, you will be on the front end, no doubt. There's a lot of pace in this race. So I like a horse that didn't get any pace the other day. Coming out of the same race as Solid Country Goal, Battle Scars. He had no pace to run at, and I thought he ran a really good third. Once again, look who's jumping on, Pratt. Right?
Yeah.
I had him back at a slow pace, and I thought she finished really good. I expect she's to get a lot more pace to run at on Saturday, and he's going to be my key in that race for sure. And then, in addition to that, Evan Harlan, who won that race that day, the feature race this past Saturday when we're at the NHC at Fairgrounds, Evan Harlan was going to win that race if didn't get totally taken up. Maker wound up winning a race at 12-1.
Evan Harlan's stall? Who's that?
No. Who is it? I think it's Walsh, maybe.
Okay.
I think it's Walsh.
Okay.
Yeah, it is Walsh. Came in from Turfway, won this race, and was going to repeat on Saturday, if not for traffic trouble late. So I think it's a live heat. I like Battle Scars. The other horse you mentioned, Solid Country Goal, is coming out the same race. I liked him. He would be one of my hookups, as was Quaternion. The six.
I like Quaternion.
Yeah.
As a horse.
And then if you're confident the seven will be on a lead, I'll take a pace horse and throw him in there. How's that? For you?
All right.
Just for you.
All right. I appreciate it. Let me get my man.
Go ahead. We good.
I'm not going to let you. We're not going to walk away from the two maiden races.
Well,
are you kidding?
Maybe you can help me because Cox has brought in two stake winners on these days. He brought in Galea's Princess.
Right.
And who wound up winning the stake in New York, right? And
yep.
Then I think it's pretty safe to say that Impel's got a stake win in her future. And he brought her in. Nobody knew anything about either of them. They showed up and they just ran lights out. I got to think that this what this is McPeak's old mare, right? Kath Ballou?
Kath Ballou, yes.
Wasn't that McPeak? Right. She was a nice horse.
Yes, she was.
This, and they paid like $1 million for this horse?
$1,150,000.
You think he's good looking?
I imagine he's a good looking colt. He gets Flavian Pratt.
Right.
There's a lot to like.
I mean, I don't know anything about him. I just know he's probably can run a little bit, right? Of the ones here, both Al's horses have been doing good. United House, who is out of the first foal out of Blip and a Bly.
Bo Lane, the one and only great Bo Lane.
Yeah, it took forever for him. They finally named this horse. He's been working under the
without mirrors. A name?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But both of Al's horses are doing good. House United and In Writing are both solid. And of the firsters, those would be the ones that I would, you know, give a look at. But Devil's Got a Cause is coming out of two pretty monster races, Just a Touch and Drip. And he's going to get some relief in that regards. Johnny V sticks with him. He had drawn way outside last time and gets a little better post. So those would be the four I'd be interested in there.
Well, and I got Corporal, certainly, and, of course, Mr. Lincoln comes back with a second start. This is the Constitution, homebred of Barbara Bankies, that is out of Hot Dixie, Chick. And, of course, Pauline's Pearl is his sister, as well as Union Jackson. And finally, we go to the fourth race. Stu Slagle was talking about just a little bit about Chris Block. And how about Town and Country with their homebred into Mischief filly, Mischief My Way, who's a three-quarter to a Dare Manor?
Wow. Hold on. Let me find out.
Who's been doing the pedigree work?
You.
Who's better than me?
A lot of time on the airplane, huh?
Exactly right. How did you know that? Jeff Franklin is in the background, too.
So,
this is a lively conversation. I'm taking notes so quickly, I'm needing new pens.
I'm going to give a little look to Ragtime Lady in here, Amos's horse. I've liked the way she's trained since her last race. And Morales has been riding this turf course well, especially since I think Tom had a little talk with him about keeping horses closer. I think this horse will be a little bit closer. And I'm expecting her to give her best effort to date in this race. Thought she drew well, and she'll probably be my key in the race. I haven't seen a lot of Mischief My Way, to be honest with you. I can't give you an opinion one way or the other on her. I think Per Factor's got to be used, and I would think the rail horse Without Cause has to be used for Cassie.
She's had four tries at it, interesting. You've also got Michelle Lovell back with Carnane.
Now, I got mixed feelings on War Siren. Had one good work and a couple works that I wasn't crazy about. So I don't know what to do there. One work I really liked. The other two I was expecting a little better. But look, here's another one he's been saving for this day. Now, this one has been here for a while, though. Pratt jumps on that one, too. But, you know, I thought at a decent price, Ames's horse was probably going to be the key for me, Ragtime Lady.
Well, usually on these big days, we say it every year, Al Stahl and Tom Amos, they got the kind of clients and they've got the kind of know-how. There's nothing in this town certain owners like better than waltzing into that winner's circle.
Where are you going to be Saturday?
On a big day.
Where should I look for you?
I'll come see you. I do my paddock to track apron stunt.
I'll be up for the later part of the card, so I'll see you.
Outstanding.
Sounds like the whole
are we Mosca's? What are we doing? Are we getting a dinner in, or what's the story?
You free tonight?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
The Mosca's.
Do you really?
Why not? What else?
I don't have anybody lined up. So
all right.
Me later.
All right.
I got to make a run up to Lafayette this afternoon or early today.
All right. And, we got Frank. We got Brightson's tomorrow.
Oh, good for you. Who's bringing you there?
Unless Pessin jumps into the fray. I mean, I'm here. Or 2 days already, and
this is a tough. This is a tough week for Pessin.
That's true.
Yeah, he's trying to get in all the restaurants he's not going to see for another 6 months.
he's like a bear. It's the opposite of a bear hibernating for the winter. He's got to eat and it's got to hold him until next November.
Right. You're right. He's got a list. He'll stay busy. All right.
The one and only
Touch
Frank
base
McGoey.
With me later.
Come take a picture, actually, with... easy with that headset. Come take a picture with Stu so I can put the two of you up together, and then we'll talk to Jeff Franklin the last 15 minutes. That's it. Hold a... That's it. Hold in a beignet.
Perfect.
You can...
only in the
world. I love it. That is fabulous. There we go. Unbelievable. Frank McGoey, everybody. Always spectacular. Frank, I'll talk to you later. I'll see you tonight. Let's welcome in Jeff Franklin.
Hey, Steve. Tough act to follow there. My gosh.
Well, listen.
How much fun is Frank? Remarkable.
He is worth the price of admission.
Yep.
As we say. Before anything else, wait a minute. You're not going to let everybody congratulate you for helping them last week. Snarky? Well, not Snarky. What was the horse?
Sketchy.
Sketchy. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, there are very few times, you and I have been doing this a while, very few times I'm astounded by something. Did you see what the trifecta paid in that race?
I saw what everybody was high-fiving each other for it. It was very strange. The fact that horse even went off at the number it did was surprising.
Well, how about, Steve, $1,800?
I know.
Unbelievable. So, it was a great day. So many people in your audience, called and texted and everything. It's great. And plus, Ron Ellis has been a 30-year friend of mine, so I was thrilled for him.
100%. I said that on the NHC telecast, radio show, because he had a tough time of it and is steadily rebuilding his business. And how that horse was 24-1 was very strange.
Yeah.
Especially because every Thoroughgraph player was on him.
That's right. Yep. And in full disclosure, so that was the grand slam of the day, but I totally struck out with BG Warrior, who held on in the race down at Turfway. I faded her at 3-2 with great confidence, and she held on. She ran great. I mean, she opened up and kept on running. And the horse I like, Linguistic, was like 45-1 or something. I mean, she ran fourth, beaten half a dozen lengths or something, but 45-1. So I was looking for, it was quite a bit of fun that day. Quite a bit of fun.
Well, let's see if we can't duplicate it. It's a great day of racing. In fact, the Saturdays, from this point on, the Saturdays are going to roll along, fast and furious between Turfway and Fairgrounds Saturday. We've got the preps, and not just the preps. We've got the older horses as well, short, long, turf, dirt. And I thought that guys would want to and gals would want to listen to analysis of the 2 3-year-old features. So let's talk about the Fairgrounds Louisiana Derby and the Turfway Ruby Stakes.
So the Derby is a fascinating race, and in full disclosure, I have to start out and say there are only two horses that I bet in the Kentucky Derby futures, and one of them is in this race. His name is Agate Road. I got max odds on him before the last race, before the San F. Davis, and I think he's clearly the horse to beat here, and I know I heard what Frank had to say about the work, et cetera, et cetera. I love this horse. And one thing that for folks that haven't seen him, pay attention to this horse in the post parade. He is a magnificent creature, and it's the reason why I bet him. He strikes you as the kind of horse that will continue to develop. And from a Thoroughgraph perspective, his 5 is as fast, if not faster, than anything in the race. So we have a turf horse primarily as a 2-year-old. Fletcher brings him back, tries him on the dirt, and runs a much better, much faster race than one would think. And I don't believe, because some of the Thoroughgraph guys are listening, well, what about the bounce factor? I don't see it. I think this is a horse with a great base. He's a 3-year-old developing. They tend not to regress. They tend to move forward. And if I'm right, he's the horse I want to be around at 8-1 in the Derby. That said, and I think you and Frank said it perfectly, there are 5, 6, 7 horses that are within 2 lengths of each other in the race. How can you separate Hall of Fame and Antiquarian, Catching Freedom and Honor Marie and Track Phantom? Any one of them could do their thing. And they all are in great patterns to move forward. I suppose at prices, I'd be really tempted to take Honor Marie and maybe Honor Marie and would probably be the other one I'd want to throw in with Agate Road. But I love Agate Road. Full disclosure. Sorry.
No, I don't blame you at all. I mean, that number is posted and may very well be one of those that turned out to be a dirt horse all along. And, there's going to be at very least an honest pace in here. And anything from that number or forward is going to work. I will just repeat that, from a pattern standpoint, Antiquarian and at a nice price. Antiquarian has got my attention with those pair of sevens. I respect Catching Freedom. You do get Pratt here, and I don't want the 4-1, but I like that progress. Common Defense, 6-1, I suppose is about the right price. I guess that is probably a fair. A fair number, behind Timberlake and that Rebel, and he's another horse that has yet to go backwards, right? So it's strictly a matter, as Thoroughgraph players, it's strictly a matter of, if there's the pattern you like enough or best at the price that's most attractive to you, and build your plays from there. And I would pick a key horse, I Track Phantom is a horse we got on early with Asmussen, and Steve made it very clear that this was a horse that was going to need to be raced into shape and was going to take, was going to get off at every exit along the way. And he expected to dance every dance with this horse. So, I certainly respect Asmussen's approach, but it doesn't feel like he's making the same progress that Epicenter. I mean, Epicenter was the poster horse comparison to Track Phantom, and it doesn't feel like he's on that same, arcing forward trajectory.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And plus, now we're up to, he's had 6 races already, on basically a 3-week schedule, and it's not the typical pattern where you would expect to see somebody blast through to a 2 or a 3, which may be necessary to win this race. You would figure, given what we just said, 5, 6 horses that are all perched in the 5-7 range, and they're this time of year, the 3-year-olds, one of them is going to pop up. So my bet's Agate Road, but the other 3 or 4 we discussed, it wouldn't surprise us at all. And Track Phantom actually kind of would surprise me. He does have amazing speed, and that we'll see how the track plays that day. But let's not also forget 1 3/16. Really, really interesting race at this time of year. So I'm all over Agate Road, and I'll be probably using him with the other horses we've discussed.
All right, let's look northward to Florence, y'all, and the refreshed Turfway Park and the Jeff Ruby Stakes that has been 4 different names, at least, over the years.
That's so funny.
Including the long-lamented GalleryFurniture.com Stakes. That was the one that... it's so much fun when you go to certain venues and like on Equibase, and you pull up some stake, and it's got some offbeat sponsor that year. The favorite may be, all time, the Blackberry Haskell. Right? How great was that? The Blackberry, the people, I think it was when Rachel, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rachel, that was Rachel's Haskell, I believe, was the Blackberry Haskell. And there was also one year, the Vodafone, the Haskell presented by Vodafone. because they advertised with us. That was like in 05 or 06. That was, John was friendly with the Vodafone people. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It's funny because I remember in the old days, all the names for their key racers, you say, I've lost track. I can't even remember them anymore. I remember when I was Gary Stevens' agent, we rode Sol Wars to run second in the Jim Beam. And so I always had kind of a fun spot in my heart for Turfway. But keeping track of these names has been hysterical over the years. So as it pertains to the Jeff Ruby, I think that there is a silly, silly morning line there. If I got anywhere near 15 to 1 on Ocello, I just push my chips in. I don't know what to say. It's just a silly, silly prize. I reckon he's going to be 4 to 1. But we'll see. Off of the bad effort, that's what I love about Thoroughgraf. A lot of people are going to say, I just ran 6, well-beaten, something's wrong with him. But from a Thoroughgraf perspective, it really was just kind of another stop on the way. And he'd ran a 6 as a late 2-year-old. That projects to, about a 4 or a 5 on Saturday. That can get it done. So I'm very interested in that horse.
All right. Who else?
Need it? So I would say the other couple of horses, Northern Flame, Kenny McPeak's horse, also ran very, very quick, very fast numbers as a 2-year-old would project to perhaps, maybe even a little bit further ahead of Othello. If I throw out his sloppy track and troubled races, this is a developing horse. The distance would seem to do well for him. Julian rides well at these distances. He's my second choice in the race in Northern Flame. And the interesting horse for me is Seize the Gray, Wayne Lucas's horse.
Right.
Who, a lot of us call the horses with this pattern an alternator. Runs a good race, runs right. a bad race. Runs a good race, runs. So is he an alternator, or is he the 3-year-old after Wayne gave him 3 months off that found himself and now Seize the Gray, the son of Arrogate, who's going to possibly strut his stuff. So he's the most interesting horse in the race to me, as far as what am I going to do with this horse? He's only 6 to 1. So I would tend to say he's going to regress, but he'll be in my trifectas as well. So those are the horses I'm keen on in the race.
All right.
And,
well,
how about you?
I'd like to know what's going on with Circle P, because I see the Triple Espresso, who's headed there, is in the race after Agate Road scratches. So there's got to be another scratch, because otherwise Pletcher would not be certain to get Triple Espresso in. So I'm not sure who else is not running. But one horse that has to be noted is Woodcourt, the Cipriano Contreras, coming out of, Oaklawn. Ran a 6 3/4. This is a horse that came over from Brendan Walsh, who was running him on the synthetic at here at Turfway, and now comes back, and it feels like, as a 3-year-old here, the first quarter of the year is starting to, to move forward. So I Woodcourt might be getting good at the right time, and has, had trips over the surface. And there was one other horse, just because I respect the hell out of Bill Morey, and you get Gerardo Corrales. Lucky Jeremy is going to make a forward move. Is it going to be enough? I don't know. But he's a looking at Lucky, who gets winners on synthetic. He hits 15% with his synthetic runners, and I trust Morey's judgment. He doesn't miss too many tricks.
Well, yeah, and forgive me, I should have thrown in Billy's horse, because the other thing about Lucky Jeremy, he's never gone backwards, and he may have the controlling speed. And so this is the kind of horse that he could even, if he just runs a 6 and other horses are going 2, 3, 4 wide around him, he could run a 6 and beat horses that are running 3s and 4s. So I was remiss for not throwing him in. I'm looking at my notes, and I had him highlighted and didn't say it, so I'm a moron today. You're absolutely right.
No problem. Yeah. Well, that it's going to be a tremendous day of racing. You need with as many races at both venues. Plus, there's the combination of the Bayou Bluegrass pick five. We'll go over a lot of that tomorrow, Twin Spires weekend preview. But Jeff Franklin, everybody, Crafty JF, not that he does much tweeting, and I'll be talking to you from California next week. Am I going to see you when I'm out there?
Yeah, we got to get together, Steve.
All right.
That'd be great.
Outstanding. Jeff Franklin, everybody, when using Thoroughgraph, thanks to Jeff, and of course, thanks to Stu Slagle, and of course, we had Magui here, we had Dr. Stephen Allday, and of course, earlier, well, we never got to Larry, Schwartzlander, Pete Fornatale. Yeah, Pete Fornatale, Stewart. Who else? Who else was Magui? Allday, that's it. That was it. That's the show. That's our show for today, as the saying goes, as hosts say. good luck if you're playing today. Good luck today to Gokin. Coca-Cola, we're in the first with Landauer today at the Big A. Safe trip. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed. Back with you tomorrow. And a big, big Twin Spires weekend preview, Turfway and Fairgrounds. I'll talk to you then. Replay 6 to 9 tomorrow.
So we have a
I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Caravelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.